Hello, Joel here. And before we get into this edition of the Joel vs. Arthritis podcast, I'm just jumping in to remind you to please give a review and subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you listen. It really does help us, but more importantly, it helps more people find us who need to hear the valuable lived experience of the guests that we feature on the show. And don't forget that every interview that you hear here on the Joel vs. Arthritis podcast is recorded live on our YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/Joel vs. Arthritis every Sunday night from 7 o'clock GMT. So if you want to join the conversation live and get involved with the chat that goes on throughout the interview, then please do so. Thank you very much for listening. I'm delighted to be joined by a lady who is everything basically I aspire to be. Molly Schreiber is a patient living with multiple autoimmune diseases, an astounding advocate, the community director of Savvy Cooperative, and works tirelessly to ensure that no patient feels alone in their healthcare journey. And by magic, hopefully, Molly, you're with us. Do you, for anyone, we'll deep dive into everything you're about to say as a bit of an overview, but just for anyone who's not familiar with your work or what you do you want to just give a little quick introduction about yourself and you know, what your role is and everything?
Sure. Yeah. So you mentioned that I'm a patient. So, yep, I've had type 1 diabetes since I was a little kid, and then rheumatoid arthritis for a little over a decade now. And then I also have the pleasure of working for Savvy Cooperative. It's a patient-owned co-op where we try to just make sure that patients and caregivers are included in the creation of anything that's being made for them. So we want to make sure that patients and caregivers have a voice in the products, treatments, and lovely advertisements that come out and make sure that they have a voice. And I have the great job of getting to just talk to new people and try to get some new faces and amplify some new voices every day.
That's awesome. And I've got so many questions and comments about that side of your role. We'll save them for later. But I suppose just to get started, the community here absolutely loves, like, a not because they're more, but just because of that fascination with the diagnosis journey and them challenges, because a lot of those people go through that once, and if they're unfortunate, a couple of times in their life. And we don't really talk about it enough, and because that tends to be the longest bit where you're stuck in limbo. So I'm not going to assume which one of your conditions came first, but do you want to just maybe talk about your sort of first experience with one of those and what that looked like for us?
Sure. Yeah. So growing up, my father actually had type 1 diabetes, and his father as well. So I don't really know life without it, you could say. When I was 8 years old, I got poison ivy. Not a big deal. You don't really associate that with diabetes. But since it's an autoimmune condition, anything can really trigger it to kind of kick off. And I, back then, you know, went back and forth to the pediatrician, and my, you know, mom was saying, you know, she's not eating and drinking. I don't think those have anything to do with poison ivy. You know, it seems like these two things don't add up. And after multiple visits and going back and forth, my father knew to test my blood sugar himself, and he did, and it was very high. And I was immediately admitted to the hospital and diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And so I'm 43 now, so I've had, you know, 34, 35 years of this disease. And honestly, because I grew up with it, because I grew up around, you know, injections and blood testing and all of that, I think it was a bit easier. So I always share that my diagnosis with rheumatoid arthritis was the one that really threw me for a loop, because I didn't know what to expect, or I thought I knew what to expect. And as you know, you don't really know until you are diagnosed.
So what sort of age did that? So I suppose, yeah, with the family history and everything, diabetes probably didn't feel that unnatural, and you'd had that exposure. But yeah, what sort of age and did the rheumatoid arthritis thing start? And how did that first sort of present? Because I know not everybody makes that connection from day one.
Yeah, I was about 31, and I had gone away for the weekend, and my elbow started hurting. And I thought, I had maybe carried a bag funny, you know, when you travel or in the airport. And my arm eventually locked just like this. And I kept going to orthopedist and I kept going to my PCP and they would say it was tennis elbow, or I was favoring it. That was my favorite because, you know, you can't touch your face or like put your shirt on. You know, there's not much you can do when your elbow doesn't move. So kept going back and forth over about, I would say, like 8 weeks. And then very quickly, I had trouble walking down the stairs and I had to start sitting to go down the stairs in my house, and couldn't, my hands, you know, were hurting, were so swollen, everything was. And I went back to my general practitioner and said, something's really wrong. Like, this isn't my elbow anymore. Like, something's really wrong. And luckily she listened and did a battery of blood tests. So I was very lucky to have someone listen to me and test me. And then I was also lucky that my rheumatoid arthritis factor, my rheumatoid factor tested positive. Not everyone has that experience. And yes. And that's why I say I know that I'm lucky, because that, you know, quickly got me a diagnosis. And I know that's privilege. I know that that is not the norm for so many people.
And what was that sort of then time span between that sort of onset to you getting a name for it?
Probably about 4 months. So oh, okay. It came on, yes, very sure. quickly for yeah. me, and just got to the point that I would fall asleep getting my hair cut. You know, I couldn't, I had, you know, fatigue at levels that I hope to not experience again. That just things that didn't add up, that just felt very strange for me.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm one of those people, it doesn't show in blood tests. So mine technically goes as juvenile idiopathic arthritis and is more linked to psoriatic disease. But yeah, commonly that would show, and mine doesn't. And even to this day, like however many decades I've been living with it now, I will still get a doctor say, well, your bloods look great, when you're telling them you're in agony. And that is, yeah, it's the most frustrating thing. So you're fortunate, but I would say, yeah, don't feel bad about that. You know, that obviously got you the help you needed quickly. So obviously you got the diagnosis and everything. What then did the treatment look like, and how long did it take you to find sort of a combination that worked? Because that tends to be the next sort of lengthy phase for a lot of people.
Yes, you summed that up very well. So here in the US, and especially in the area that I live in, you can't just make an appointment with a rheumatologist. You actually have to send over your records, and then they decide to take you on as a patient. And so there's a very big backlog to get in to see someone. And so I'd had a point, and this was December at the time, I'd had an appointment in April, very far out, but I was very much struggling. My general practitioner said, I'm not telling you to go to the emergency room, but I'm telling you to go to the emergency room. And I was like, okay. Because I had so much pain and stiffness and everything. So I went, and I'm going to use that word lucky again, but a rheumatologist happened to be visiting a patient that had been in an accident that was their patient, and they were seeing them a couple beds down from me.
Oh, okay.
And the emergency physician told him, and he said, I'll see you tomorrow morning, bright and early, 7 a.m. before my office opens. And he did that for me. And wow. I don't know what things would have looked like if I had waited that 4 months. Would my elbow have ever, I mean, you see me moving it now, yeah, you know, yeah. I wonder what would have changed. But, you know, I had the fun start on methotrexate, as many of yeah. us do. And then the fun of, we need something to go along with methotrexate. Yeah. And here in the US, I always point that out, that I'm in the US, because this is why. My doctor said, well, which commercials have you seen on TV for a biologic? And I, to this day, this is something I struggle with, because with diabetes, the type 1, everyone uses insulin.
Yeah.
Yes, it's not perfect. And yet I don't want to discredit how hard living with diabetes is. I don't mean that at all. But with rheumatoid arthritis and other types of arthritis and autoimmune diseases, they don't know yet which biologics or which medications are a good match, you know, just yet. And so it is a gamble, but it's a gamble enough to say, which advertisements have you seen? Because that's how we're going to pick what to try on you.
as somebody in the UK, I will never get my head around people telling me that.
That's just why I pointed out.
At home and sitting,
I knew
know.
I had to point that out. But yeah, so I tried Humira, and within 2 months, my arm straightened. Okay. I mean, I had physical therapists trying to bend it and, you know, all sorts of things. I'd be lying if I said that I haven't been on and off a lot more medications over the past 10 years. I've learned that since I also have type 1 and some other autoimmune stuff, I get sick really easily. So Humira, although was a godsend, it gave me asthma due to a horrible chest infection I couldn't kick. And so I always play that balance of strong enough to get my, you know, disease under control, but not enough to kill off every bit of my immune
yes. That is a subject I talk a lot about. As someone who was already I was an asthmatic before I went on Humira and biologics. Yep. And yeah, I recently had a chest infection that lasted from the end of October all the way until January, until I got COVID on top of that. And
oh my goodness.
You would get those comments where people say, well, why are you taking this stuff if it just keeps me? I get it, like, own employment over the years, you know, where your boss or someone will say, well, why do you take this stuff? It makes you sick, because they never see what you were like as the untreated arthritis patient. And I think that's always a really difficult subject. I don't know if you've faced similar sort of conversations when it keeps making you sick or not.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Especially, you know, even with my kids were young then, and, you know, seeing me take, you know, for methotrexate, you know, that would make me really sick, you know, no matter what dose, what I did. But then with biologics, it was like, well, why are you taking this if it makes you feel this bad or gets you this sick? And it's like, well, because I can work, or because I can, you know, boil water and cook dinner, not like the ads, you know, I'm not looking to rock climb or canoe. I just want to like cook dinner. And yeah, I could do those things, whereas I couldn't before. And like, I don't think people get that unless they're us, right?
Yeah, and because it is that long-term health condition, you know, and life changes and social circles change, I find anyway, there's very few people I know today, apart from family, that would know the teenage Joel who was in a wheelchair. And you know what I mean? They just don't. So it's very hard for people to get a handle on what it could look like if it was unmanaged or we didn't take these medications. And yeah, as somebody that was on methotrexate from a very young age until I couldn't tolerate it anymore, were there some benefits there? Because we get lots of people talking about, you know, the horror stories and everything with methotrexate and the side effects. I think that sometimes the fact that it can make a big difference gets lost. Was that your experience or not? If it wasn't, please be honest.
So to be completely honest, it, no matter, I tried, you know, tablets, injections, and I have to say that I do go back to it at times, everyone, because I do know it works. So it does work. But for me, when my kids were little, I had to sort of pick a day that I knew I couldn't function to recover. And so for me, that was usually a Saturday or a Sunday because I was working and I lost a day. You know, I lost a day with my family. I had to look at my kids and say, I can't, you know, I can't, literally can't get up, or I might get sick, or, you know, whatever. And so I would go on and off, and, you know, and my doctor would sort of know that was, if I was asking to go back on it, okay, she must want the benefit. She knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. You're already stuck in the bathroom the next day.
Exactly. And so, and I, you know, tried every type of remedy, you know, I could think of, because there was benefits, and it does really help. It's just, unfortunately for me, no matter what dose I take, it makes me incredibly sick. And so I got tired of losing a day, honestly. Yeah. You know, I'd rather
feel less
for a whole week than lose a whole day, you know?
Yeah, I totally get that. So I used to take mine on a Friday. I used to take it from the age of like 14 until my mid-20s, until I had a problem with my liver. I used to have to take it on a Friday because I knew if I took it on a school night, if you like, there was no way I was getting out of, you know, from having my head over the toilet for the next day. Yeah. But I think the reason I mention it and the benefits, and like you say, you go back to it occasionally, as I don't know what it's like where you are, but here in particular, and over the pandemic where there's lots of sort of social media growth and people sort of sharing their stories, it gets such a bad rap. And it is a difficult drug to tolerate. But it just makes me, I always find it quite curious how people will talk about the constant chest infections, ear, nose and throat stuff with biologics, but somehow methotrexate is so much worse. But in my personal experience, it was throwing up the next day on methotrexate or getting months and months of chest infections a year on biologics, which, to be fair, doesn't really weigh more than the other. That's just my experience.
Yeah. And you actually, like you just mentioned, you really just kind of weigh, you know, what do I lose, like a whole day, or do I really lose a long time because I'm very sick? Or
yeah.
And with methotrexate, you could also like take a weekend off if you really wanted to, you know, you could control that. Whereas biologics, you know, once they're going,
and once something's got in, that is like trying to get rid of that. So my I've got a 4-year-old, and he basically had something coming back from nursery from September to Christmas. He was basically ill every other week with something. I was basically like that, but with less resilience, you know. So I talk about it a lot because I think we have a real issue. Over here, it's different in other places, but over here where people want to jump the options to get to biologics because they don't understand the pros and the cons, or all they see is people sharing the horror stories. So if there is any good news or anyone who has any benefits from these things out there, I like to try and spend a minute or two on it, just because if not, it just gets missed in the noise of, you know, everyone wants to share. It's like when you're expecting a baby, everyone tells you the bad stuff, they don't tell you about all the lovely stuff.
But you're right, like biologics are great, and I mean they've obviously given me, you know, my life, and I'm working and I'm able to do things, but they haven't come with the negatives. I mean, they are very strong drugs. And so, yeah, if I could have stayed on just methotrexate and just known, okay, I might feel awful once a week, and now my kids are a little bit older, so they're a little more tolerant of that. But, you know, I would love to just stay on that. That would be tremendous. But, yeah. Yeah, I hope people will try it. I do realize it does get a bad rap because, you know, it's yellow and it's gross looking, and, you know, and then people tell, you know, the awful things, but they also tell the awful things about the biologics too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I appreciate you sharing that. So I went off on a bit of a sort of tangent with that one, but I think it's very rare that we do get somebody who comes on here and talks about how it helped them. So I sort of wanted to make the most of that. How did you find, obviously the two conditions there. I don't know if you want to talk about any others that you're sort of working with, but like, how did you find that management? Because, you know, arthritis is heavy enough as it is. And then if you've got diabetes or other things going on, you know, did that one, you know, tell us a bit about how you managed that or how you managed it in the past. And also, you know, did that cause issues getting treatment or diagnosis, you know, because of all them various comorbidities and interactions and things like that?
Yeah. So one of the big things that quickly kind of made me feel a little bit different as someone that had, you know, type 1 as well as RA is steroids. So steroids are typically a no-go. They because they raise my blood sugar and they make it harder to control. Now, I am lucky that I have a really great insulin pump, continuous glucose monitor. I have really great tech, and, you know, we didn't have that. I sound very old when I didn't have that when I was growing up, but we didn't. And so things are very different now that I can actually have a profile in my insulin pump that is called, I used to take Rituxan, so I need to change the name. I'm not on that anymore, but with Rituxan, you get infused steroids. So I called it my Rituxan profile, and I would change my pump to that, and it would give me extra insulin for a certain period of time to accommodate the steroids and what was happening. But a lot of the issues that I have run into are funny. So I go to like a cardiologist for a checkup, and I said, you know, how often do I need to come back? And she, and I was thinking, because of the diabetes, I didn't think of it with rheumatoid arthritis. And she said, oh, well, I actually want to see you every year from the rheumatoid arthritis. Diabetes is no big deal now with the tech that we have and the way we're able to stay in control. And that was very eye-opening for me that, and for a lot of people, it's not just your joints, you know, it's a lot more. And I think that, you know, I've shared that with a couple even coworkers in the past week. A lot of people don't know that. They don't know that it's not just a big ankle, you know, or something like that.
And it sort of ties into that education stuff, which I'm sure you probably talk about as much as I do about, you know, patients being educated and the value of that. And obviously you gain that as you go through, you know, a lot of us are living with these things for quite a long while. And don't worry, I very much say, when I was younger, we didn't have dedicated pediatric rheumatology departments and all this. So I sound like a dinosaur whenever I talk about this stuff. But, you know, they're, we learn as we go along, but you know, one of the things I think there should be is a lot more sort of like that education. You know, for example, here when you get your biologics, you'll have a nurse come around and they will tell you the do's and don'ts, and then that's the last you hear about it. And people forget that, you know, there's certain foods you should avoid, and it can lower your body temperature and mask a fever and all these sort of things. Do you find that, as you know, the longer you've lived with these things, that education has helped, or have you received any education like around your conditions that has helped you live better with it?
Yeah, sometimes it's funny because when I'm put on like a new medication with an injection, I always get someone saying, well, we're going to bring you in the office and show you how to do this. And I have to say, well, I've been giving myself injections since I was 8. So I think I'm okay in that respect. And they always, always a good laugh. But in terms of like the education, I think it's being kind of like you mentioned with getting sick, being reminded that the slightest thing can really turn into a lot more, and you have to be very aware, you know, just a cold quickly turn into bronchitis, quickly turn into pneumonia. You have to be so on top of all of the other things because your immune system is so suppressed from these medications.
And I find, I don't know about you, but since, and I'm not going to talk about the pandemic too much because it feels like it's all we've talked about the last 2 years on this show, but like, you know, there was at least that it became part of, like, over here anyway, the conversation, which just people maybe didn't get before, you know, even family members who wouldn't maybe quite understand that, you know, how low your immune system's knocked down in order to stop all this overactivity. You know, for me, that was the one thing that came out of that situation that helped me a little bit, because people were talking about people that were high risk and starting to understand about that. I don't know what your experiences was on that side of the pond.
Yeah, very similar. It felt just like people understood for a second what it was kind of like to live in our shoes. Yeah. And I don't, you know, not that I would ever want anyone to get COVID, but if you've had it and you're not an autoimmune patient, you got a little taste of what fatigue is like. For example, we came through my house and my husband had it and my kids. And for the first time, they kind of got a glimpse of that it's not being tired. It's a fatigue that you can't explain. But I, like I mentioned, I don't wish COVID on anyone, but I feel like people got a little glimpse of sort of what it could be like. And they didn't want it.
No, it's that wading through water. I feel like I spent years trying to explain to someone, I'm not tired, I'm not being lazy. And it, for me, it's always like I'll have the pain spike and then it's almost like a hangover, a bit like methotrexate gave you a hangover the next day. For me, I'll always get like a fatigue hangover. And I guess it's like your body being in fight and flight and all that sort of thing. But trying to explain to people that it's like I'm wading through water, just climbing the stairs or, you know, doing simple. And I can't find a better way.
Go take a nap. And you're like, no.
No, and it literally
won't. I would love a nap, but the nap isn't going to cure it, unfortunately.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. The only thing I've found that can slightly help around sleep is if I do like little 20-minute power. If I go past that, I feel 10 times worse. If I do like little 20-minute like a power thing, it kind of allows my body to reset a little bit. But yeah, nobody will ever understand that whole fatigue thing until I've experienced it. And I don't want anyone to experience it, because it's more debilitating to me than having to use a mobility aid or something, because it's like this whole body thing, isn't it?
Yeah, you don't have any reserves. You don't have that ability to just push through a quick, and I'm not talking about, you know, lifting a car. I'm talking about like carrying groceries or, you know, whatever. You don't have that little reserve to be like, I'll just do this one last bit or this little, you don't have it. You just don't.
No, totally. Yeah, totally. And I've had to actually cancel these sort of discussions before halfway through or cut them short, because again, like the brain thing, how I just, affects my ability to think. And it's like, I don't know, I can't remember what I did yesterday, let alone try and do something on the fly like this. And And yeah, and as somebody that I never experienced the whole brain fog thing as a child with arthritis, I just didn't. It's only since I've got older that that's become more. Yeah, I never had it as a kid, or if I did, to be fair, back then, the idea of treating children with juvenile arthritis was just to stick them in a hospital bed for a couple of weeks and throw everything at them. So whether I'd even noticed, you know, fatigue or brain fog, but definitely as I got older with that journey, that's become more of a problem for me personally.
Oh yeah, I take notes on everything. I email myself more than I'd care to admit because I'll forget. I'll literally just forget.
Yeah. Lists is the way to go. Thank you for sharing all that. I've got so many more questions, and our journeys are very relatable in terms of the drugs we've had and the experiences we've had. But I'm really keen to ask you about what got you into the advocacy space. And you know, I could probably guess, as someone who's been there myself, and we have had lots of people on where there tends to be that sort of cope and mechanism thing. But what was it for you? How did that start? And where did you, you know, first get that sort of experience of the sort of power of your own story and voice?
Yeah, so when I was diagnosed with RA, I looked online to find someone that also had diabetes because, you know, at the time they were saying, you know, steroids isn't really an option for you. And I was like, okay, well, what are other people doing? And I couldn't find anyone. And so the diabetes community has, you know, a great online community. I mean, they have a chat that's, you know, literally every week. And I popped in and used, you know, the hashtag and said, I was just diagnosed with this. Is there anyone else? And there's this great gentleman named Rick Phillips that you might know. He is a fellow patient. And he said, you are like me. And I've been looking for someone like me. And I finally met someone that had both. And so it came about via a chat. Again, I just started sharing my story, but because I couldn't find anything like it. I couldn't find the help I needed. So I just kind of showed the ins and outs, you know, the good, the bad. You know, today I'm able to work and go to the gym. Tomorrow I'm probably not moving. Who knows what it'll look like? And I wanted to show both sides. And so I just did that and had the pleasure of meeting other advocates. And I have always mentioned Rick though, because he's always just been a steady blogger and a steady writer and always trying to include me. I talk to him almost every day, but he was the first patient I found who said, I have what you have and I've been looking for someone like you. And it was instant friendship 10 years ago or more.
That is amazing. And how, like, and again, I know we talked a lot about how people won't understand that feeling of being seen and somebody else getting it. You know, like the fact that, you know, people ask me why I do all of this stuff, and I don't know why I do it sometimes when I'm exhausted. But it's that, like, the fact that I'm sitting here with a smile on my face, hearing like you sharing stuff and thinking, yes, that's exactly how I felt. And people, you know, I think they need that. And like one of the reasons we exist is a whole peer support space. And that is essentially what it is, isn't it? Hearing that bound to echo back from somebody else that can relate to your experiences.
Yeah, you don't have to explain yourself. You get to just show up. And it's one of the things that I really like about where I work, because a lot of us that work there are patients. It was co-founded by patients. And you don't, you know, prior to working at Savvy, I worked for hospital systems and nonprofits. And, you know, if you call out for a day, they don't understand. And, you know, it's, well, when will you feel better? And it's like, wouldn't I love to know, you know, or like, I'm never going to feel better, but I think you're asking, when will I be able to work next? Or, you know, whatever the question is. So now working at Savvy, that burden, I didn't realize how heavy that was until I didn't have to carry it anymore. And you're surrounded by people that, like you just said, that get it and don't ask questions like, when will you feel better? Because they know that, oh, isn't that a great question? You know, what do we all like to know?
My favorite is that, are we going to do this so you can concentrate on getting better? As if I'm not willing it.
No. Oh, yes, let doing me want it now.
Yeah. Yeah, let me just read some motivational book. I'll just envision it and then I'll be perfectly healthy. Yeah. It's amazing to know that those spaces exist. As somebody that went like a good chunk of like 10 years perfectly fit and healthy and you know, I was building my career and everything else, to then what happened in the pandemic, particularly here in the UK. For anyone who's watching, who isn't here and isn't familiar, a lot of us couldn't get access to our treatments, or treatments stopped. There was a period where we couldn't get blood tests done. It was, you know, it was just not a fun time. I think I went like 2.5 months without sulfasalazine because it just wasn't available. And so it induced all these flares for lots of people like me. And you suddenly become a different person. You don't know how to have those conversations with employers and everything else, because they're like, well, what happened to that Joel of three years ago? And, you know, that really reliable one who was never sick. And yeah, to hear your story that there are places out there that embrace that, you know, that holistic view of the person and see the value in the person despite their condition or disability, it just, I don't know, it brings me a lot of hope. So do you want to share more for anyone watching this about what Savvy Cooperative does and where it fits in with everything?
Sure. Well, I so Savvy was started as a co-op back in 2016, and I actually joined then just because I really believed in what they were doing. And basically our co-founders, one is juvenile idiopathic arthritis patient and the other is cystic fibrosis. They, you know, were invited, like some of us have been, to share our opinions at different tables and companies, and found the same people, you know, at all of the events. And I know myself, like, it's great, you make friends, but are your five people really representing the millions of people with this condition? You know, it isn't the best. And they just wanted to change that. And they wanted to make sure that, you know, there were new faces at the table, and that, you know, patients weren't just a checkbox at the end, you know, hey, we made this thing for you, don't you love it? Tell everyone you love it, you know.
You wouldn't believe how many focus groups I've been in that have existed like that. You know, within 10 seconds that you are here purely so they can say, we spoke to patients, and you had no say on it.
Yes.
My new thing is, before, sorry, I know I'm going off on a tangent here and ranting, but like, my new thing is, when I get asked to do a focus group now, the first question I'll ask is, who decided this was a need? You know, who decided this? Because if it isn't patients, then I don't want to, do you know what I mean? Because if it was just an organization thinking, oh, we've got some budget, let's create an app for the sake of app's sake, and, you know, the last thing patients need is a fifth symptom tracker app. Sorry, you can tell I'm quite
irate. No, I love that question though. Like, who wanted this? And like, yes, exactly. Like, so many times you're just like the checkbox, and they make, you know, it's not, you know, rocket science. If you co-create something, people will like it and use it and buy it. So your company will do better. You know, it's kind of like, why wouldn't you do it this way? But yeah, we work in, you know, every treatment condition and across the world, and just basically try to make sure that patients are included in co-creating any type of health innovation, and that they're paid for it too. We want to make sure that a patient's voice, you know, that's your lived experience. That's, like you mentioned, we tried to get people to understand, but no one can understand without talking to us. They're not going to read what life is like, you know, and get it in a book or in an article. So a lot is like chats like this, trying to understand like how they can help without making another app. Like, what could they actually do to make your life better?
Rather than doing the whole bookending it, because for me, the experience is, right, what are the pain points? Then there's this massive void where you don't know what's happening when they take those pain points, and then suddenly at the other end comes another app.
or whatever. Like, we made this with patients, and you're like, oh, great.
So we're obviously speaking the same language, because for me, it's about involving patients at every step. You know, like, I want to see that, where it's not like, you know, sometimes you'll get the same, I'll get the same pharma company ask me to do 8 or 9 different things a year. And my question would be, well, why isn't there a patient lead already in place that, you know, that can have that network? And obviously that's where you guys fill the gap and everything. So it's really, like I say, talking about hope again, it really gives me hope that these things are now starting to exist, because you only have to go back 10 years ago and somebody would have looked at you like you're an alien just landed on from another planet if you said about involving the patient at these levels.
Oh yeah, we've had people where they're coming up with just, you know, the design of a clinical trial, and it literally doesn't occur to them that it might be a struggle for a patient to hold down a job and raise their children and go 5 days a week to a treatment facility. Like, they actually have to hear someone say that. like that to me is mind blowing, but that really shows how much work there is that still needs to be done. Because like we're people. We're still people. We're not just patients.
No, we're all trying to keep us stuff together and you know, and manage with all these extra sort of plates we have to spin with our conditions. And many of us don't just have the one, you know. So you get the extra complication with that. But yeah, that needs to change. And I think, yeah, it feeds into a lot of like what we're doing. And sometimes people won't get why we do the stuff here on Twitch and these conversations, and like trying to get across that, like you say, people are not going to read a book. I could write a 2000 word essay or whatever and people aren't going to read it. So, you know, for me, I use creative skills to try and punch people in the heart and get them to sit up and listen. And there's lots of different ways you can do that, isn't there? And use whatever tools you've got to try and get that point across.
Yeah, and you're giving people hope the same way by doing this. You're showing that you can still do what you want to do, or you're still able to facilitate conversations. Just like, you know, that people, for example, might, you know, not want to exercise or something, but maybe they see someone that did something like, I could do that stretch. I could try that. Like right there, that's hope. That's like one less person feeling alone or discouraged, or, and I'm not saying everything's rosy, like I'm definitely not saying that, but for me, I have to try to find some type of positivity, because I'm afraid, honestly, that if I don't, I'll go into like a black hole that I won't be able to get out of. Because if you allow yourself to just surround with how awful things are, I don't know how you can climb out, honestly. And so that's when I look to the community like you and other people who are living. No, you die, like I mentioned, I don't need you climbing a mountain or doing anything.
Exactly, but that.
Just, just thriving with their disease. Yeah.
See that? We had someone come on here and use the term, I think it was inspiration porn. And that is so true. It's like you don't need to be like this superhero climbing Everest and raising £20,000 for charity or whatever. You can literally just be living the life you want to live with your adaptions and the things you need to do to make that possible, you know.
Yeah, I just want to dump water out of a pot or something. I don't need a canoe or build something. I just want to make pasta, you know, or whatever it is.
it's not a big ask. And I think that's another message we've got to keep trying to get across to these organizations, because of some of the conversations I have is all about massive things. Like, and for me, like you talk about that black hole. Like I talk a lot on here about, if I wouldn't have had my son the last 4 years, I don't know where I definitely wouldn't have had, you know, I do a lot of like CBT and stuff, and they'll always ask you, well, what's your I can't remember the term they use, but not like lifesaver, but what's your focus that gets you out of bed in the morning? I'll always talk about my son, and you know, and so for me, I'd like to do these focus groups and things where somebody'll, you know, ask on those terms, not about like, do you want to run London Marathon? No, I just want to be a dad. And if my son asks me to chase him around the garden, I want to be able to do that without worrying how many days I'm going to be laid up afterwards if I participate.
You summed it up so perfectly. That's exactly what it is. You just want to be able to live your life as best you can, you know?
Yeah, totally. So where... I understand if you don't want to talk too much about Savvy, but in, you know, your role, what does that, you know, consist of, and what are the sort of like, what's the future plans for the organization? Because I'm, you know, interested myself, and I'm sure the viewers are as well.
Yeah, we've grown a ton. So I've been there a little over 2 years. And when I started, there were six of us, including our two co-founders, who were very small. And now we're at 20 so employees. And so that's a lot in 2 years. But my job is getting to just literally try to talk to new faces, new patients, new people, and try to get them to realize that their voice is valuable, that their voice, they should not, you know, a lot of us, I'm sure, see ads and things on Facebook or do this survey or click this thing. And I just want to make sure that patients know to be careful, that their lived experience is that it's theirs, and, you know, that should be protected, but, you know, shared appropriately. And so always looking to get new faces. And then, I mean, we are just honestly growing so much. We, have so many projects. I can share one that we've done. They don't all wrap pretty, as you know, research, you don't always get the pretty bow at the end. We did a great one for Amazon that wanted their Alexa devices to work better for people with a stutter or stammer. And so
awesome.
We found those patients, we got them the devices, and now all of your Alexas have a patch in them that you don't realize that allows it to pause or wait and learn and listen better to someone with a vocal impairment. And so not everything gets to wrap that up that pretty, you know, usually research takes a very long time, but that one really shows how we were able to take a community and really provide a service that you didn't even know you needed. And now you don't even have to opt into it. It's just there, you know, and that's a great example of something that we do every day.
Yeah. And that is so nice to have that example, because like you say, you'll normally come in at a little bit, or, you know, I know I'll do a bit and then it hands over to the next person. And yeah, to be able to see that end product, that must be so mm-hmm. satisfying and sort of fulfilling. Yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah, and it felt good because I got to learn, for example, that community, you know, they don't get a lot of support because there's not money in it, right? We all know how that is. If there's not a big drug, there's unfortunately not a lot of support. And so that's just an example of like something I get to learn every day about different communities, because we work in every, you know, different condition, the rarest of the rare, or men that use an app, which that's also sometimes just as hard as rare versus, you know, but because of that, I learned so much, but I also learned how much we all have in common, you know, across conditions, that we all deal with pain and family and expectations and mental health. And it's just really eye-opening how much we all really do have in common.
Yeah, the mental health side, I talk a lot about it, probably too much for some people's liking, but you know, for me, it just surprises me why we're not having that conversation more, especially here in the UK. Like, stereotypically, men find that very difficult, and if you'd asked me 10 years ago before I found my voice, I would have found that very difficult. So I think the least I could do is sort of facilitate that. But it's like, it's things like the guilt that people feel with long-term health conditions that they absolutely have no reason to feel, but we all put it on ourselves, don't we? And you talked earlier about burden and the weight of things. And for me, it's, you know, that sort of thing. And I'm sure in your role, you probably see that across all the communities in, you know, different forms.
Yeah, especially the word burden. I mean, that's the word, right? Like, you feel sometimes like, oh, I'm always asking for help, so maybe I just shouldn't ask this one time, or, you know. Meanwhile, my husband would be the first to be like, what are you talking about? Like, that's what I'm here for. You know, like the word burden doesn't even come into their minds, you know, but that is to me probably the hardest part, what you just said, the burden and the guilt feeling.
Yeah. And my wife was the first to say, what can I do to help? And like, you don't know how to answer it,
because
it's just like,
I'm fine.
Yeah,
I'm fine.
I'm okay.
And like, she probably says, no, you're not. I can tell.
Yeah. I have two states. I'm like really miserable when I'm really struggling mentally, or if I go really quiet, then she knows. Like, if I ever shut up, then I'm in a lot of pain. They're pretty much my two states when I'm not doing too good.
Yep. And she knows. Yep. Yeah. And meanwhile, you'll go, I don't need anything.
Yeah, that's it. And then 2 days later, I'll come up with another idea. Like tonight, we're doing this on multiple platforms where I don't help. But like I say, is that it for me anyway, it's that therapy, it's that empowering, that I don't know, there's certain bits of our conditions we can't control, but providing platforms and helping others get their voice out there, it's just something, I don't know how you feel, but for something that I can do, I don't know, just makes it a little bit more palatable living with everything.
Yeah. And you're, you know, it kind of lets you feel like you have a little control, you know, like you kind of can dictate for a little while what you're going to do. Cause a lot of times you don't get that opportunity, unfortunately.
So I can't imagine how rewarding and empowering your role is. And it must be brilliant having those conversations with people and getting certain people into those conversations as well. Like, yeah, it's just incredible.
I feel very lucky. I honestly, if I had to say my biggest struggle, it's not working, because I really love what I do. That it's cheesy, I know, but it doesn't feel like work. And I have experienced, you know, not feeling that way for a long time. So I do know the difference.
Yes, yeah, totally. And I'm sure people can relate to that. And like I say, we have so many conversations on here where work is a massive issue for people, either the pressure to, you know, keep paying the bills and keeping work, or you know, trying to find a flexible situation. And it's so nice to hear the other end of that, and somebody has gone through that journey and found something that works for them. So thank you for sharing that. I needed to hear that this week, if nothing else. So I'm sure lots of other people would as well. I'm really conscious of your time, especially because it's a sundown. I don't want to take any more time away from you and your family. Is there anything you want to that we haven't maybe covered? Do you want to pick up on, or if there's any sort of, you know, this is your opportunity to plug. If you want to tell people where they can find you, or where they can get involved with the savvy work, over to you.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say, I try to share on Instagram at Molly E. Schreiber, but. I have to warn you, if you don't like cats, you're probably not going to enjoy my page very much, because I do love my cat. And so he is featured usually more in stories. I try to keep, you know, a little civility on my actual page, but I do try to show like literally the ups and downs. So sometimes it's a great day and I'm at the gym, and other times I'm wearing, you know, the ice all over my hands while I'm trying to type. You know, I really do try to show both sides, and I've met so many great people through Instagram and Twitter. I feel very lucky that I've been able to connect with so many people through this lovely disease that I never would have met before. So I hesitate to say that it's a blessing, but I wouldn't know these people. I wouldn't be here talking to you without it. So I am very thankful for these communities.
Yeah, and that, like I say, for me, it helps me cope as well. And just like before I let you go, I just want to say, it's very rare that I get somebody on and you can go back and watch the other shows. I'm not just saying this. It's very rare that I get somebody on that I can relate to so much, not just in their experiences, but also their mindset and what they're trying to achieve and what they're doing. So this has been I've had a bit of a rough day today, and this has been an absolute joy to sit and listen to you talk. And I'd love to have you back again. If you've got anything coming up or any new projects or anything you want to tell us about, then the door is always open.
Of course. I honestly, it's the best, because the time went by and I went, oh, wait. And then I was like, did I talk too much? But it was that wonderful to speak with you. Like, truly, like, I just really appreciate people that understand sort of throwing a positive light as much as possible out of necessity a lot of times, but also just because it truly does make things a bit better.
It really does. And I say it's my therapy too. So thank you for joining us, guys. Anyone watching this, either live or recorded, I will put links back to Molly and Savvy Cooperative in the description. We had some lovely comments come in whilst you've been talking. I've tried to share a few of those on screen, but I will let you go now, Molly. Thank you so much for joining me on your Sunday. Enjoy the rest of your day, which I'm sure you've got a few more hours left of it than we have here. And I very much look forward to doing more of you over the year on socials and everything else.
Thank you, Joel. I hope the rest of your day continues to be a bit better too, even though you have a little less time than I do.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Molly. Have a good day.
Thanks, Joel. Bye, everybody.